Okay, good evening, everyone. We're up to the sixth installment of the of our overview of Hasidic Rebbes, and tonight we do an individual who, as you can see, from 1772 to 1810, his life was extraordinarily brief, 38 years only, but nevertheless, someone with an immense amount of influence over Hasidic lore. So number one is, let's point out that I brought here a bunch of biographical points that are significant. I might have gone a little bit overboard with the whole Rav Nachman of Breslov thing, just because he, for someone who lived only 38 years, he was extraordinarily prolific. He wrote a lot, and his thought was, it changed, and it modified, and it grew, and he was a very, very creative thinker, and there's a lot to talk about here, so I tried to get in as much as I could. So number one is, he is the great-grandchild of the Baal Shem Tov on his mother's side. So he was maternally related to the Baal Shem Tov, which gave him yichus, which within the Hasidic world. But that being said, he had a complicated relationship with Hasidus. He challenged the going opinions, particularly in his area, on the notions of authority. He was not a believer that everyone, just because they inherited it, were somehow a Rebbe. He didn't believe that. He thought being a Rebbe was earned, which is why you don't have, after Rav Nachman, there are no more Breslover Rebbes. Rav Nachman is the only Rebbe in Breslov history. He was a critic of the notion of popular faith, which we saw a lot in some of the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov. And he was also a critic of the notions of the miracle working that often went around along with Hasidic lore. In 1798 and 1799, he travels to Israel. And when he comes back, his philosophy is transformed. He becomes, or he views himself after that, as a chassid in the classic sense of the word. But nonetheless, he doesn't buy into the going Hasidic milieu. He kind of breaks out of it a little bit. He aligns himself, you can see here, with the more intellectual school of Hasidism, which is not associated with the Hasidus of Ukraine and Poland, where he is, but is associated with the what we would call the Russian Hasidus, more like Chabad, which we'll talk about in more detail when we get to them. His life was a series of struggle with sin. He writes very candidly about his desires for sexual relations and things like that, and those types of struggles that were very influential on the way he grew into his personality. And for those of you who like the song, so they always say, Rabbi Nachman, Nachman, Me'uman. I thought he was Nachman of Breslov. So for the majority of his life, he lives in Breslov. At the end of his life, he moves to Uman. The end of his life, which was from the ages of like 34 to 38, if you think about it, were also some of his most fruitful in terms of writing. So therefore, it gained a lot in terms of Hasidic lore. To this day, Breslover Hasidim will go to Uman for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur to be by the grave of Rav Nachman, and hence the Rabbi Nachman Me'uman. For those of you who ever wondered on the Nachman Me'uman, what the heck is up with that? So this is much, much later. It goes back to Tzfat, more contemporarily Tzfat, that a certain Breslover Chassid who was living in Tzfat became, by accident, he was a very committed Jew, and by accident he drank on Shivat Arba Tammuz, and he felt so horrible about it, and he was heartbroken that he had broken such a significant fast day, and he was crying, and he was unconsolable, until one day he opened up his Gemara, or some say his Zohar, whatever it is that he opened up the next day. He opened it up to find a letter from Rav Nachman that said that his tshuva has been accepted and he can move on with his life. And it was signed, Na Nach Nachman Nachman Me'uman. Okay, so that's where it comes from, in case you were wondering where it came from. People say that it that the handwriting analysis proved that it was actually the same Rav Nachman. I'm sure there's a nice tour guide in Tzfat who can tell you all about it next time you're there. And he could show you the Beis Medrash where the letter hangs to this day or something like that. But that's just there. But being that Rabbi Nachman was such a critic of miracle working, so I'm just going to say that maybe Rabbi Nachman would not have liked that story. What were some of his teachings that made him unique? So number one is he was a proponent of constant self-examination. He won, in fact, at the beginnings of his service as a Hasidic Rebbe, the Hasidim would actually confess their sins in front of him, and he would actually confess his own sins to them as well. So there was a quality of self-examination that he promoted. After that, he changed it to an hour a day one should spend every day in self-examination. But paradoxically, he's also the person who said mitzvah gedola lios b'simcha tamid. So his notion was that that you needed to embrace simcha, but it was nonetheless a simcha that required understanding. He was in favor of extreme practices and purification rituals. He believed that he was not training Hasidim, he was training Tzadikim. If you remember, in a lot of the works of the Maggid of Mezrich, of the Baal Shem Tov, certainly of later Rabbanim, and we're going to see it more in the Noam Elimelech, but we saw it in Rav Levi Yitzchak, that the tzaddik took on a special role as an intermediary between the individual, the regular person, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Nachman believed that everyone had the potential to transcend that gap and become a tzaddik, and therefore he demanded an immense amount from his chassidim. One of the words that you'll see, or two of the words that you'll see, repeating themselves in Rav Nachman's works are the words minios and ga'agugim. Ga'aguim, excuse me. Minios are obstacles. Ga'aguim are, when you say I miss someone, you say ani mit ga'agea elav. Ga'aguim are missing someone and desiring to be close to them again. And this relates to very much one of the repeating themes in Rav Nachman's philosophy, which is the relationship, the challenge of a relationship with God, which is, and we'll see this in some of the sources that we're going to read today, that Rav Nachman was very much focused on the gap that existed in this world between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and between the world in which we live. And the challenge is overcoming that canyon, I wrote here, between God and man, or between man and God, more correctly, that man has to overcome it, and he has to transcend the miniot, right? He has to transcend the obstacles, and the motivator is the ga'aguim. It's this, you know, deep and intense desire to be close to God. One aspect of Rav Nachman's thought is he was extraordinarily and vocally anti-philosophical. Rav Nachman studied the Mor Nevuchim, and he believed that it was incorrect, and he told his chassidim not to study it. The goal of knowledge, he would say, is to realize that we know nothing. Okay? That's the goal. The more you study, the more you learn, the more you realize how little you understand about this world, and you had to embrace that, because the more you embraced your lack of knowledge, the closer you were come to the source of all, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Nachman develops the niggun as a method of communing to God, and we all know the power of the Hasidic niggun and how much it's taken on, what a significant place it's taken on since then. And also another thing that he's famous for is his stories. So his stories weren't they're innovative, but they were very much in line with the types of stories that you might hear in all sorts of rural life in Poland. You know, these were the types of stories that some might be telling, that people might be telling one another, or that you might hear. What made Rav Nachman's stories so exceptionally creative is that every one of the stories is a model for understanding the basics of mystical thought. So oftentimes in his stories, you'll see a lost princess, a stolen princess, an enslaved princess. That princess is the Shechina that is in Galut. You might see in his story a pauper who needs to find redemption. That is the potential for the... And he might seek out that redemption by saving the princess in some way, shape, or form. They're the type of tales that you might hear in other areas, but the power of them is that they're able to take sophisticated mystical thought and bring them into very, very concrete examples. And once you start seeing the stories, you start to pick up on what it is that he's doing. If anyone wants a book that is really what's been for me, a wonderful eye-opening introduction to Rav Nachman's stories, so Rabbi Steinsaltz wrote a book on Rav Nachman's stories where he tells over the stories and then he gives the explanation for the stories, including the mystical explanations. And the book has been translated into English, and it's published by Korein. So if anyone's looking for that one. We're going to learn a few sources from Likutei Moharan. The Rav Nachman wrote a number of books, including Rav Natan of Breslov. His student wrote a full biography of him as well. But I brought for you a number of sources from Likutei Moharan, which is a collection of his works. So I just wanted to start. Originally, I was just going to go directly into one of his teachings, but the book opens with something called the Shir Na'im, the sweet song, or the pleasant song. So just to read a little bit of it, we don't necessarily have to do all of it, but just to read a little bit. Shir Na'im me'adunenu morenu v'rabenu zecher tzadik levracha, a sweet song or a pleasant song from our master, our teacher, our rabbi. May his memory be a blessing. Ve'ilu divrei rabbeinu zichrono lebracha. These are the words of our rabbi. Shir Na'im.
That's Nachman himself.
No, this is right now as of Gimel.
The first two psukim about.
Oh, so what?
Who's the Moreinu Rabbeinu?
No, that's
him.
That's Rav Nachman. Right. Moreinu Rabbeinu is Rav Nachman. Right. So he says Shir Na'im kolel inanim rabim bedvarim muatim ma'at machzik etamur raba. It's a few things, but these few things they capture a great deal. Yidaber niflaot mishavach torasenu hakdosha, and it will give over the wonders and praises of our holy Torah. Mishavach Moshe Rabbeinu alav hashalom, and it'll praise Moses, our rabbi, may his memory be a blessing. Umusar nifla, it will give musar, it'll give ethical instruction. This orus, an inspiration, atzum, immense. Shereh kol echad es nafsho, that it will inspire each person's soul. Vidaper migudulas haborei isbarach, and he'll explain, and you'll be able to now speak of the greatness of the holy of the Creator. Vinuflaos briosav, and the pella, the awesomeness or the exceptionalism of his creation. Vinatach bishiro linaskir niflaos arivas niimas tanuge olam haba. And it will remind you of the sweetness, the pleasantness of the world to come. And it will also explain the suffering of those who are unable to achieve that. So let's get into them. Okay? Nimusei adutav kolom lo yushvu ledatenu. So number one is all the philosophies of the other religions don't compare to our religion. Chochmehem badu milibam nimusim b'sichlam ha'enoshi. They invented their own philosophies with their normative human intellects. Moshe ala lamarom, but Moses went up to the heavens v'anan v'livusho, and he was encompassed or he was enclosed by the cloud. Nimsa ha'mechuyav diber imo v'chol pam uferesh min ha'isha. That's why he had to separate from his wife, because the commander spoke to him. Nivzim udvuim uschufim anachnu. We are suffering, right? We are ridiculed. Chachmato me'ayin timtza mimenu lekach tov latkachnu. But what do we have? Where are we going to find wisdom? We find wisdom from him. Melech bishurum indatinu kishenei achim lo yitpardu. the kings who dwells in his palace with our religion are like two brothers who never separate. Nishmato v'gufo azach zo mizo lo nadu. God's soul and your soul and your body cannot be separated from one another. Nafshotam rabim kin rabu deotem v'chilu svarotehem. There are many different types of Jews, so too with different opinions. Chadashim mikarov ba'u avodotehem, machshavotehem lo machshavotenu lo darchenu darcheihem. Others came with new ideas, but their thoughts are not our thoughts, and not their path our path. Nafshotenu achati ve'ino notali ribui tzalmehem. But our soul, the soul of the Jewish people, is one, and it does not go over to their, or it will not be leaning to their many tzlamim, their many images that they create. And he goes through here, he's dealing, you can hear, kind of beneath the poetic language, a lot of the philosophical bases of what he's talking about. For example, the notion that our religion, unlike other religions, is not based on intellectual or rationalistic explanations, but it's based on tzivui, it's based on commandments, the notion of a unified soul of the Jewish people. Of a Masorah. He's going to speak about the light that exists behind every Jewish soul. A lot of a mixture of the paradoxes that usually go along with Rav Nachman's stories or Rav Nachman's philosophy. So just to see there, and he goes through a lot of the issues that go along, including he ends off obviously with kind of a messianic vision that he says if you go to Nunvav, Shir Chadash Az Nashir Makinu Kol Echad Machar BeEtzav Basar Chatum Torah Belev Kol Echad Mi Lishkachach, right, that there's time's going to come when we're all going to sing a new song, we're all going to have one God, one King, the Torah will be stamped upon the hearts of every and never forgotten. Hamavet LaNetzach Yuvlak Kitor Reach, there will be no remnant of death. Navi Nevav LaChochma LaAvin Tchunat Gufenu Merchakei Platav Aruchutei Barav. There's going to be prophecy, chiyuv avanatomo, lalidat haboreim, tiyari le'tirok kulam, a knowledge of God, marpeik chocholi, there's going to be wellness, all sickness will be cured, nochal levad l'kiyum nafshotinu l'mayi tavot tibenu, and we are no longer going to be slaves to our desires, but instead, chazak, we're going to be serving God. That is kind of this beautiful little song that opens up Likutei Moharan. Once we get into Likutei Moharan, so I brought for you here Samach Dalid in Likutei Moharan, chapter 64. It says as follows: Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. God says to Moshe, Bo al Paro, ki ani echbadti libo vet lev avadav leman shiti ototai ele bekerbo. God says, I am going to harden Paro's heart, in order that I can punish him and I can show him all of my signs. Laman tisaper bozni bincha uven mincha et asher italalti b'mitzrayim et ososai asher samti b'am v'idatem ki ani Hashem hinimi v'machar arbe b'kvulecha. Okay, so that's God's going to bring the arbe, and that's going to be one of the signs of God's existence for Paro. Bet. And he says as follows, Ki Hashem yitzbarach mechmas rachman uso bara asolam. Why did God create the world? Because God was compassionate. Ki rasa legalos rachmanu so, and he wanted to reveal that immense compassion. V'im lo haya briyas olam, al mi haya maram rachmanu so, and if there were no world, who would even know that God was so compassionate, right? I can be the most compassionate person in the world, but if I'm all alone, who's going to know that I'm so compassionate? V'akem bara es kol habriya mitchilas ha'atzilus ad sof nikudas ha'merkash al olam ha'gashmi kdei laros rachmanu so. So therefore, what did he do? He created the entire world from the beginning of the emanations, the Atzilus, until the most material part of the world that we now exist in. And Gimel, V'kasher asa Hashem yitzbarach livro et ha'olam. But when God tried to create the world, lo haya makom livaro, there was no place to create the world. Why? Mechma sha'akol, sha'ya ha'kol ein tof. If God is infinite, that means his space that he takes up is infinite as well. So there was no room for God to... no room for the world to exist. Akein tzimtzim es haor letzadin. What did he do? Therefore, he contracted the light to the sides. And through this contraction, Nasa Chalal Panui. What was created? Space. Chalal is space. With nothingness. V'tocha Chalal HaPanui Hazen, in this nothingness, this space, Nisavu Kol HaYamim V'Amidos, Asher B'riyas HaOlam. What came into existence? Basically, life, the world, as we know, came into existence in B'riyas HaOlam when God created the world. Dalet. V'tocha Chalal HaPanui Haya Mukhrach L'B'riyas HaOlam. The only way the world could come to existence is by creating this space first. Ki b'yotia chalal panui, without this space being created, lo haya shum makom lebriyas olam kanal, there would have been no place for the world, for the material world to exist. V'ze ha-tzimtzum shel chalal panui, yi'afshar la'avin la'asi ki im la'asi lavo ki tzarich lomar bo shnei hafachim, yesh v'ayin. Says this we'll never understand. Why? Why will we never understand it? Because you need, again, Rav Nachman, love of paradox, you need to understand the existence of two contradicting terms. Yesh, existence, and Ayin, the lack thereof of existence. And one cannot comprehend those two things simultaneously.
This seems, in a sense, a reformulation of Chassidus as it's gone before.
No, so it's not. Because if you remember, when we did Rav Levi Yitzchak,
right.
he did not view Yesh and Ayin as paradoxical terms. He viewed them as very kind of coexisting
right.
terms,
right.
And he was very comfortable. Rav Nachman, speaking as a philosopher, yet as someone who has a distaste for philosophy, he himself is a paradox.
But the idea of the chalal is that.
Meaning, yeah, he's using mystical terminology of tzimtzum.
Is that basically the origins of that from Chassidus?
No, that's from the Ari. That goes back to the Ari.
Right.
Yeah. Right. The Ari is famous for, you know, Shvirat HaKilim, for,
right.
you know, the breaking of the vessels,
right.
etc., which he's going to get into. Okay. Hi'achalal panui hu yal yidei tzimtzum. What happens? Space is created via tzimtzum, via this contractions. Shekaviyachon tzimtzim elukuto misham. He removed his godliness from there. So what happens in this space? It's as if there's no godliness there. Kim lochein eino panui. Because if there were godliness there, it wouldn't be space. V'akol ein sof, because everything would be infinite. V'imakom l'briyas ha'olam kulal. Ava be'emes lamito, but in truth, b'vadai afo pichein. But in truth, even though space can only exist without God, in truth, even in space, b'vadai afo pichein yesham gam mekein elokut. But there's still godliness there. This is Chassidus. Because we have another contradiction. On the one hand, material world couldn't exist if God is here. So God had to contract. On the other hand, nothing can exist without the living life force of God. So that means God couldn't contract. So did he contract or did he not contract? It's a quandary. It's a paradox. He says, that's why. I just explained to you why you can't understand what it means to be space. Because on the one hand, we can't exist without him moving. On the other hand, we can't exist without him being. So he is, but he moved. But he can't. Okay?
But he has to be present for us to be, for anything to be.
But
I mean, again, today's portion is that second time in
no,
a row.
But he has to
that directly.
He has to be present in order for us to be. But if we are being, that is proof that he is not present.
Right.
Okay. So Rav Nachman says it's an eternal quandary, and he says stop thinking about it. You know why you should stop thinking about it? Because it is a paradox of existence. You will never know the answer to that question until Mashiach is coming. I'm sorry. Accept it. Right? He is and he isn't. Is God here? Yes. But if he's here, how could I be here? Good question.
Secular thought in the scientific era
yeah.
refuses to accept
I don't think Rav Nachman cares about that.
He doesn't.
No, that's beyond the scope of his discussion. All right. Now he deals with what it means to, you want to know, what's an apikoros, right? Vida, he says, no, sheish ne mine apikorsos. There's two kinds of apikorsos. Okay, yesh apikorsos, there's a type of apikorsos sheba mechachmos chitzonios. Where does it come from? From secular wisdom. Valav ne'amar, about that, dama shetav shiv la'apikorsos. That's what Chazal tell us. You need to know what to respond to that. Ki apikorsos hazos, yehashela tshuva. That type of apikorsos that comes from the study of secular knowledge, that has answers. Okay? Ki zos apikorsos ba michochmos chitzonios, shein ba mimotaros, mimchonos shvirat kelim. Where does it come from? It came from the event of Shirat HaKelim, right, of the great breaking of the vessels, where, you know, there are klipot now. There are all these, you know, broken vessels, shards.
Klipot.
Yeah, shells, if you want to call them, that broke apart. Kimachmat riboy ha'or nishtabru HaKelim, right, because of the immensity of the light, the vessels broke apart. Umisham nishavu ka'klipot skayadua, and from there you got all the shells. And that's where secular wisdom comes from. Hainu mishriyas hakelim mimosros psoles hakedusha. Right, it's the leftovers after the holiness. Kamo etzel adam. Same thing is true with people. Yesh kamim no mosros upsoles. Right, people have external parts, extra parts. That's like secular wisdom. What are those? Kegon tzipornayim. Right, nails, viseyar and hair, viseya. And sweat, ushar psolos mosros. So what are they? They are, as it were, the nails, the hair, and the sweat of the universe. Ken kol ha-chokhma chitzona ba mimosros upsoles yedua shel kedusha. Right? Not the essence of holiness. Right? That's the would be, continuing the parable, the body. V'chein kishuf ba mimosros upsoles ha-yedua. And the same thing, that witchcraft and all these other things, they come, those are mosros. So the leftovers, after the light has been absorbed into the actual parts, v'akein. Therefore, mishino fel apikorsos hazos. Anyone who falls into this type of apikorsos, af shebevadai tzarich levroach lemelayit misham. Even though you need to run away from there, ach af al pichein mishino fel sham. Nevertheless, someone who falls there, efshar lo lemso atalon latzeis misham. A person can be saved from there. Because since these are part of the klipos, they were there, they're the result of the lights, you can still find God there. Yesham kama nitzosos hakedusha. Right, there are sparks of holiness there. V'chama osios shenishbru nafshu sham kayadua. And some signs or some letters that are there with holy sparks. Valkein, and therefore yuchal limso sham elokus. Therefore, even in the secular wisdoms, you can find holiness. V'seichel, and you can find there wisdom, li'ashev akushios shel apikorsos hazos haba mechochmos achitzonios. That's what he says means dama shetashev l'apikoros. You have to know what to respond to the apikoros. You can find, even within the secular wisdom, responses that will bring you back to holiness. Shehim baimi mosros mishivirat hakelim. Why? Because they are the waste product from the breaking of the vessels, and since they are the waste product from the breaking of the vessels, therefore they have within them nitzotzos hakedusha. In your nails, you have nutrients which are necessary for living. In your sweat, you have nutrients which are necessary for living, even though they are essentially waste product. Ki yesham chayus ichius elokus, because there is the life force of God. Hainu seichel, the letters that fell there. So that type of apikorsos you can respond to. What do? You study the same philosophies, and you can get to the response. Aval, he says, Rav Nachman says, yesh od min apikorsos. There's another form of apikorsos. Vehim chachmos she'inam chachmos. This is wisdom that is not wisdom. Ela machmas shehim amukim ve'inan masigin mosa. What is this? It's something that it has deep, but they can't be comprehended. Umachmas ze nirim kechachmos. They seem so profound, so wise, that everyone assumes that you can't understand them. Kamo, for example, the mashal k'she'echan omer svara, Sheker, in Gemara, Perish, Rashi, or Tosfos. someone says a false svara when they're learning Gemara. Machmas, and since Shein Sham Lamdan Liashef Akusha Shibalide Svarazo, right? Since there's no decent Lamdan there who's going to answer the Kasha, so what does everyone assume? Aidezen in Mesha Mar Svar Vachachma Gadola, Avshabamath Eno Svar Klal. If a decent Talmud Chacham were there to respond, he would tell you that's not even a question. But because there's no one there, everyone thinks he's such a Chacham. But he's really not. So he says, Kane yish kama mevuchos vekushios etzal machkarim. He says, so too, amongst the philosophers, there are certain confusions and questions. Sheba'emes einam shum chachma, but there's no substance, there's no wisdom to them. Vakushios betelim meikara. They're not even questions. They're not even questions, but everyone assumes they're questions. Why? Because no one's smart enough to tell you it's not a question. Because there's no one who's wise enough to prove that they're not questions, that's why everyone assumes that they're so smart. Sounds like he's talking about postmodernism. Okay.
Except there's no
halal. Exactly. In truth, you would never be able to respond to these questions. These aren't even coming from the klipos. You know where they're coming from? They're coming from empty space. They're coming from the lack thereof. Because in this empty space, these shailas, these questions are saying, that are basically making it, look how wise he is. He disproved this, he disproved that. They come from emptiness, from space. So you're never going to respond, you'll be able to respond to them. Because the responses are responses that are sparks of God, but since there's no God there, you have no response. Because then there would be a response. V'akein, al apikorsis hazos ne'amar kol ba'ya lo yishuvun. Excuse me. On this topic, a type of apikorsis, anyone who goes there won't return. Ki in shum tshuva al apikorsis hazos. There's no response. Me'achar sherba michal panoi, because it's coming from space. Shemisham tzimtzei melakos kaviyachol, because there God contracted completely from it. Rak, what can you do? Rak Yisrael al yidei emunah. But Israel, the Jewish people, via simple faith, Ovrim al kol hachochmos, what do? They transcend all the wisdoms. Via filu ala apikorsus hazos michala panoi, even on this great, powerful apikorsus that comes from empty space. Kihem ma'aminim ba'ashem yisbarach b'li shum chakira v'chochma. Why does a Jew believe in God? Not because God's existence is proven. But because without any chakira or chachma, it doesn't require any rationalizations. Rak be'emuna shalema, but it's a complete belief. Ki Hashem yisbarach memale kol almin, because God fills all the worlds, v'soviv kol almin, and he surrounds all worlds. Nimtza shehu kaviyachol besoch kol almos, v'soviv kol almos. Therefore, he's inside and around all of the worlds. V'tzarich lios efresh kaviyachol bein hamilui v'hasivuv. Shim lav in kena kol echad. He says, it doesn't make any sense. There should be something different between filling and circling, but God is doing both. Ach ayidei b'chinat ha-chalal panum shin sham tzimtzei mer el koso kaviyachol v'socho baras kol abriya. But he says that's the understanding of the empty space. Okay? He contracted his godliness. Okay? And he created that. What do we have here? Paradox. God's there, but he's not. He's around, but he's in. Nimsa shachala panui makuif es kol ha'olam. The empty space surrounds the world. Vashem yisbarach hu sovev kol ha'olamin. But God surrounds the whole world. Misaviv gam ha'chala panui, surrounding also the empty space. V'alkein shayach lomar memali kol ha'olamin. Hainu kol b'riya shenivra b'socha chala panui v'gam sovev kol ha'olamin. Hainu shemisaviv agam ha'chala panui v'emtsa masik ha'chala panui kaviyachom tzimtzim misham el kuso. So God's surrounding. The world is created in the middle, okay? In the middle of this empty space. But this empty space also has God, but it's empty space. V'hinei But when we believe that God surrounds and is inside all of the world, since the world came into existence because of him, therefore, not only does he surround it, but he's also in it. Boy, you can't comprehend it. You can't capture it in your mind. And to find God there, as we mentioned. What do? They transcend. They hop over all the different type of arpikorsis that comes from that empty space. Because I know that those questions, you'll never find a good answer. Right? Because if you found an answer, right, you would find the Holy One. But then if you found an answer, then the world wouldn't exist. But there's really an answer. And God is really there. The only way God gets into the Chalal Panoi is when you believe. The Akain, he says, Yisrael Nikraim Ivriim. That's why the Jewish people are called Hebrews, Ivriim. Ashim Shehim Ovrim Be'emunasoa Kol HaChachmos. Why? Because they are over. They transcend. They pass over all the other wisdoms. Even those wisdoms would seem to be have these questions which are unanswerable. And therefore Hashem Yisbarach Nikra Elokei HaIvriim. That's why God is referred to as the God of the Ivriim, of the Hebrews, of the Ovrim. Milashon Ever Hanar, across the ocean. Lashon Stanu Hashel Elikuso Misabib Etzachalal HaPanui HaPal Yidei Tzimtzuim Shem Tzimtzei Ma'or L'Stadim. V'akin Yisrael Nikrim Al-Nikrim Ivriim. The Jewish people, what are they called? Ivriim. Shaideim Unasam Shem Ma'aminim Shehim Yisbarach Olokei Ivriim Kanal Him Ovrim Akol Chochmos V'mashin Chochmos Haino Apikorsus Hashini Kanal. So it's space. And since it's space, we can't understand it, we can't comprehend it with the normative rules of intellect.
Right.
But how can we? But we can transcend it, because
right,
we're Ivriim, and Ivriim are Ovrim. We go over and we transcend the space.
This is Vemuna.
Exactly.
Right.
So it exists. It exists as both. This is Rav Nachman. I'll give you one of his stories that explains it. How can it be both? So Rav Nachman tells a story of a child who finds a box of puzzles, pieces. But there's no picture, so he doesn't know what he's supposed to be building. So what does the child do? The child reaches into the box, and he builds a beautiful picture. Then he looks back in the box. There are extra pieces. So he figures, I must have created the wrong picture. So he breaks it up, and he builds an entirely different picture. Again, he looks in the box, and there's extra pieces. So this is what it means to live in the world. There's always going to be extra pieces. Okay? There's always going to be extra pieces. Every time we try to put things together, always going to be extra pieces. What do we have to do? We have to believe that there is such a picture that would include also those pieces. And to be a Jew means to transcend the picture. I don't need the picture. I believe that this puzzle can be put together by God. That's what I believe. So that's it. That's a Rav Nachman in a nutshell.
You go back to 8 and 9 on the previous second class. 9. Encompassing, right? So
yeah.
if you tell me to envision a table.
Yeah.
Okay. I have an image of a table in my head.
Yeah.
And that image is encompassed within my mind. So the table has an actuality, just like God's creation has actuality.
No, that's not what he's referring to. He's referring to surrounding and existing in. Right? I don't know if that's the he's referring to the term surrounding. If I'm walking around the table, imagine, then I'm not on the table.
Right.
But if I'm on the table, then I'm not walking around the table.
And
I'm not under it. Right. And that's the paradox he's talking about. If God is surrounding the space, right, then he's not in the space. But if God is in the space, then he's not surrounding the space. And now I'm telling you that he contracted to create the space. But and since his contraction created the space, and now something exists within the space, and in order for that to exist within the space, it needs to have the Yechiyus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in it. Right? So what's it called? So the person asking, the Apikores, who's asking the question, all he sees is the space. Right? There's no emunah involved in it whatsoever. And since all he's focusing on is the space, so he's going to ask a question that's going to have no answer. Why? Because the essential assumption of that question is space, an existence of a world without godliness, without the life-giving force of God.
Okay.
And you're sitting here, and every time you try to follow the every time I try to follow the logic to the end, you always hit a wall. But I think that's what Rav Nachman is trying to tell you.
Right.
You're always going to hit a wall. No matter what you do, you will hit a wall, and that's the way it's supposed to be.
It's very merciful in a way because it takes you away from the responsibility of, like, I have to sit here until I get to the wall.
Exactly.
Right? It's like, which you're never going to do.
Yeah, hit the wall. Rav Nachman says, hit the wall. Hit the wall as hard as you can, and those stars you see, that's Emunah.
Okay, so then 8 coming off of 7, that vacated space.
Yeah.
Right? It's a mitzvah to believe in God.
Yeah.
Right? So if there are empty spaces where God is completely withdrawn from, and a human goes into, a believer, a Jew goes into that empty space with faith, it brings that extra holiness, those shards, right?
He's saying that the sparks are there. It's just, you transcend space. Because space is nothing. And if nothing is there, you go over it. That's his point. That's why we're called Irim. We go over the space.
Okay.
You see, you're trying to rationalize this, and he's telling you stop rationalizing.
I'm a Western person. So,
I know.
So there has to be a resolution.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Stop.
In the West, we have resolution.
Yeah, stop rationalizing it. Stop rationalizing it. That's his point. Right, and it's a total win because everyone turns. Oh, I don't believe because of that. Oh, you're an apikoros now. You know what I mean? Like, there you go. You know what's it called? Because if I had an answer, it would be holy. But since I don't have an answer, it proves that it's coming from empty space. So you need to go back and daven more.
Okay. That's great.
All right. All right. Shkayach, everyone. All right.